Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile.
With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. I bet you get 30, 30, I bet you get 30, I bet you get 20, 20, 20, I bet you get 20, 20, I bet you get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month, sold.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Hello and welcome to another Arsecast Extra. As always, with James from Gunnerblock. James, good morning to you.
Good morning, Andrew. Good morning. Did you consider a goodly morning?
Do you know what? I saw quite a lot of people asking, is this a goodly morning? Should it be a goodly morning? I can see the argument, but I think you've got to win the game to get the LY. Otherwise, you know, these are the fucking standards. You know?
Exactly. We can take our cue from Mikel Arteta, who said after the game last night, there's no way you can be fully happy with just a point.
True. William Saliba said the same on Sky afterwards. We're not satisfied.
I am quite satisfied.
I tend to agree with you. I am quite satisfied as well. You know, but I think there's something to delve into there. I you know what? I like that William Saliba is not satisfied. You know, a game which was really difficult against a team who we know are of the highest caliber. And afterwards, he's standing there on live television, you know, exhausted because he's had to give a lot to ensure that Arsenal come away from the Etihad with a point. And he's saying, you know, we can't be satisfied with that because these are games that we want to win. I think that's part of the culture, part of what Mikel Arteta is trying and has to a large extent instilled in this team, this group of players, this club. But at the same time, I think you've also got to put it in the context of you know, who we played, what their record is at the Etihad, what our record is at the Etihad. You know, after the international break, all of those things, I'm with you in that I'm relatively satisfied, albeit with a tinge of regret that we might come to.
Yeah, that sort of sums up how I feel as well. We're supposed to apologise, aren't we, to the neutral, to say, we're sorry we didn't make this the goal fest that you all wanted. But I'm not sorry at all.
No, I'm not sorry either. And, you know, the neutral, with all due respect, can go fuck him or herself. You know, I think Lewis made a very good point. So I saw somebody tweeting about it, and Lewis, if I can just find it here... responded. I'm not going to read out the guy who's he called it a catastrophic football match for the viewer. Boo fucking who. But Lewis made the point, these teams don't play to entertain neutrals. They're there to maximize their chances of getting the points because they want to win the league. Sorry if we didn't throw everyone forward and lose 4-0 so the world of football, non-Arsenal and Man City fans, could have a bit more fun with it. I mean, that is absolutely spot on. It's gotten, you know, if a game like this is entertaining for the neutrals, that's a nice little sidebar for them. But from our perspective, you know, we've got no duty other than to do what we need to do for ourselves. And I think the game plan, the way it played out, how we approach this game, how we managed this game was... very deliberate, very effective, very strategic from Mikel Arteta's point of view, and I think very heavily informed by the fact we haven't got a single point there since 2015.
Yeah, and for me, you know, heading into this game, I thought a lot back to this kind of time last year and the Premier League fixture we played at the Etihad during the run-in last season. Mm. And it was night and day, wasn't it, in terms of how Arsenal approached it and, to be honest, what they got out of it. I mean, that was a real humbling on that occasion. And here, you know, I think we really, really competed. And defensively, it was a masterclass. I really do think that in terms of our defending of our own penalty area, how little we afforded Manchester City in their home stadium, I don't think you'll see many teams defend as well as that there.
No, I think that's absolutely right. And there's a lot of focus on the two central defenders because they were in the sort of the eye-catching battle, if you like, between them and Erling Haaland. But when you look at what we did as a team to deny Manchester City, I think it's really, really impressive. Really impressive. Where was Phil Foden in this game other than in Ben White's back pocket? Which is, you know, something I'm sure Ben White relishes because no love lost there between him and Foden based on previous encounters. Kevin De Bruyne, a guy who's caused us so many problems, you know, apart from a couple of balls into the box from a set-piece situation, what did he do? Very, very little. Bernardo Silva had some moments, but again, not much was going on in that sense. And I think the effort that this team put in from front to back, the defensive effort is a credit to all of them, not just Saliba and Gabriel, who got their flyers at the end of the game, I think, because of the high-profile battle with Haaland. But, you know, the way Declan Rice completely negated Kevin De Bruyne, Kai Havertz, I think he had a really, really impressive first half, the way he competed. I don't think anybody else won more aerial duels in this game than Kai Havertz. Did he have a good game on the ball? No, I don't think so. But, you know, the effort and the work rate that went into this, I think, is, you know, it's hard to underestimate. Am I saying that right? You know what I mean? Because is it 58 successive games that Manchester City have scored at the Etihad? Teams don't get clean sheets at the Etihad. It just doesn't really happen. There's the odd anomaly here and there. So to be able to go there and do it deliberately, because I think Arsenal did it deliberately, deserves a lot of credit.
Yeah, I think so. I think so. I think that's an interesting question, sort of how much of this was the plan and how much of it is forced upon you in the moment. And I think I can't believe the plan was to have as little of the ball as we did. But I think given that the skew of the game was that way, I think we handled it exceptionally well. And it's not just the physical fatigue, it's the mental fatigue as well. Saliba spoke about that afterwards, how psychologically it's draining. And Arteta said, you know, you need to be prepared to watch 30 passes and wait for your moment to try and intercept. I think that's an incredibly draining thing. And Arsenal did that at the hardest place probably in the world to do it for the best part of 90 minutes. And, you know, I think it's a really, really creditable performance. And I think in isolation, it's a really, really good result. I think if there are any sort of caveats to that, they only come from quite how tight this race is and how valuable those extra 2 points might have been.
Well, yeah, for sure. And look, the whole Liverpool were the real winners, et cetera, et cetera. You know, of course, they won their game, they're top of the league. But I think Arsenal have to look at this game in the context of the season as well. We've taken 4 points from Manchester City this season. We've taken 4 points from Liverpool this season. I think at the start, if someone had offered you know, 4 points from City and 4 points from Liverpool back in August, you would have bitten their hands off.
Oh, it's a brilliant return. You know, Arsenal have performed the best in these top of the table clashes, and yet to beat City at home and draw to them away stands you in really, really good stead. You know, what we can say is that if Arsenal don't win the league this season, it won't be because of their performances in these big games.
For sure. And I think the you know, that's a point that we've come on to, so we might as well explore that a little bit. You know, when in previous seasons we were getting rattled by Liverpool at home and away and Manchester City at home and away, and they were scoring 3 and 4, you know, routinely, you know, the idea that we could close the gap on these two teams so quickly and so effectively felt like something of a pipe dream, to be honest. And I think whatever happens between now and the end of this season, wherever we end up, you have to acknowledge that we've done that. We have closed the gap on these two sides, which have been the best two teams in the Premier League over the last 5 or 6 years. I think there's still more to come from Arsenal. I think there are ways that we can improve and ways that we can develop and ways that we can get better. But as a marker of what you're doing and where you're going, your direction of travel, do you remember that phrase that we used to use all the time about, you know, how we're getting there? The direction of travel is obvious. It really is. And I think the fact that we were able to adapt, because you're right, you know, when you say, I don't think that was the game plan to be to have as little of the ball. I think Martin Odegaard said that afterwards. They didn't really want to defend as deep as they did. But the fact that we were prepared to do that, and I don't just mean prepared to do that, I mean literally prepared. You know, that was part of the conversation, I'm sure. Like, if it goes this way, then this is what we do and this is how we react. You know, the fact that we were able to do it so well in this game, particularly in the first half, where I think, you know, there were elements to our game which were not at the level that we would have wanted them to be and haven't, you know, we haven't necessarily seen in recent weeks. Like, I think Raya's kicking was a bit off. He slipped a couple of times, I know, but, you know, his distribution wasn't quite there. William Saliba, usually so good on the ball, passing it at something like 65% passing accuracy in that first half. Kivior, 56% passing accuracy. So when you've got two players in your back four who in possession aren't where you need them to be, that adds to the pressure and it adds to the domination that Manchester City had. You know, Jorginho, for example, I'm not saying that the game passed him by, but this was not the kind of game where I think he can deliver his best for Arsenal. So there were elements of our first half where, you know, we weren't at our best. Nevertheless, apart from that Nathan Ake header from a set piece, Manchester City had very little to offer from an attacking perspective. And that, again, is a testament to the way that this team stayed organized and disciplined positionally, and that the levels of concentration that you mentioned had to be there, you know, from start to the end of that first half.
Yeah. Defensively, it was quite an extraordinary first half. I mean, Manchester City had four touches inside the Arsenal penalty area in that first 45 minutes. That is the joint fewest they've ever had in a first half since Pep Guardiola joined the club in 2016. They were impenetrable in that first half, Arsenal. And I agree. I don't think we actually played particularly well. In fact, I'd go further than that. I'd say we were struggling is maybe the wrong word, because as you say, defensively we were comfortable, but we weren't really able to kind of get our foot on the ball in that first 20, 25 minutes or so.
Mm.
Probably up until Ake went off injured, I would say, and Arteta was able to kind of regroup with the players a bit. He called Saliba, Gabriel, Kivior, Jorginho over to him. And, you know, you're always interpreting body language, trying to see what the messaging is. But it seemed to me that he just wanted Arsenal to get the ball on the ground and circulate possession a little bit to give themselves a foothold in the game, which they hadn't necessarily got until that point.
Mm.
But I think when you go to City, you accept that there are going to be periods like that. There's going to be a time in the game, whether it's the first 20 minutes, the last 20 minutes, where they do turn the screw, where you are up against it. And what do you need to be able to do in that scenario? You need to be able to defend your space, to defend your man, to win the individual battles. And that is what Arsenal did brilliantly on the day.
Yeah. Yeah, because I think if you look back at this game, and we'll come to the moments, I think Arsenal had the best moments or the best chances, the opportunities to score a goal in this game. You know, I know City dominated possession. They dominated a lot of territory, but they didn't really do a lot with it. Did David Raya have to make a save? I mean, the one from the Ake header was, it just sort of hit him and he grabbed it. So there was a touch of, if you want to call it good fortune there, I suppose you can. But beyond that, you know, the goalkeeper didn't have a save to make. And there were moments from an Arsenal perspective that I think, you know, this is where I talk about having a tinge of regret about how ultimately the game went, where I think there were perhaps opportunities where we could have come away from this game with 3 points. Would it have been a bit smash and grab? Yes. But, you know, that's kind of what the first game was like this season at the Etihad.
Yes, absolutely. Absolutely. And I think this was similar in some respects. You know, it was not a hugely eventful game. It was always going to be decided by a moment, I think. It always had that feeling of a one-goal game.
Yeah, I texted you that, actually, yeah.
You did indeed. And I to be honest, I think it could have gone either way. I think there were moments for both teams. You know, if I think of some of the chances City had, you know, there were a couple of heart-in-mouth moments, but you have to ride your luck a bit in any of these situations. I think a draw was probably the right result. But yeah, and we'll come on to the moments for Arsenal. There was more here, potentially, I think. I'm not saying it's a failure that we didn't get it. I'm not saying it's a bad result, but I always had a nagging feeling Arsenal might need to win this game, and it was possible. You know, we were in a situation in the final 20 minutes when you get there and you're level and they're pushing and there's going to be moments on the break. It's there. Do you know what I mean? It's not beyond the realms of possibility. So, yeah, we'll get to that, I'm sure.
All right. Well, look, team selection at Gabriel Jesus out on the left-hand side, which was something I was quite keen to see, actually. I thought that in the absence of Martinelli being able to do 90 minutes, if Jesus was fit and available for this, I would have liked to have seen him on the left-hand side. That was the case. I mean, I'm a little bit sort of torn on his performance in a way, because I think he worked really hard. I think he was a little bit unlucky at times because he was penalised for a couple of free kicks when he won the ball, I thought, quite cleanly. But there were chances, you know. There was one after about 15 minutes, was it, where he put it wide with his left foot. I think another one, or maybe he just skidded it with his right foot wide of the post, and then there was one with his left foot. There was some twisty-turny. Could he have got the shot away a bit quicker, which I guess sort of frustrates people, and I do understand that. But this was the first time he started a game since the end of January. I think it was the Nottingham Forest game, which was the 30th of January, thereabouts. So basically 2 months. And there's been quite a bit of discussion about him and do we need to move on? And, you know, what did you make of his performance overall? Because I think after 2 months out, basically, to come in and be pretty effective and be potentially our most threatening attacking player is quite a positive thing, albeit I can see why elements of his performance frustrate people.
Yeah, I think I have to say I think he was good, and that might be a controversial opinion. I don't know.
No, not for me. I thought he was.
Yeah, I think we missed Martinelli. A fully fit Martinelli in this game would have given us another dimension, and I don't think Martinelli would have been asked to do what Jesus did. I think he would have kind of defended in a different way, and that's probably by being more proactive and offering more of a threat in behind and trying to push City back in that way. Jesus isn't as quick, isn't as direct, and doesn't do quite the same thing. But he was playing in front of me on that left wing, and it was fascinating to watch the level of application and detail he put into that performance. He was detailed, I think, to sort of follow Bernardo Silva a lot of the time, and certainly in the early phases of play. City, you know, I think they would have looked at Arsenal's team, seen Jakub Kivior probably playing the biggest club game of his career to date, and thought maybe that's an area we could get at. They've got Bernardo on that side. They've got Kevin De Bruyne making runs on the overlap. They had Akanji pushing forward as well, initially from right back. And I thought the job that Jesus did protecting Kivior and supporting him on that flank was exceptional. I don't think many other forward players in the world could do what he did in terms of his tactical understanding and his level of application.
I think the other thing to point out as well is that Kivior did 120 minutes in midweek for Poland. Yeah. He played on Tuesday and they had extra time. So it was always going to be a case that, you know, he might flag or fade. And I think it's a difficult job anyway. You know, again, I think he's done really well there. But he is a centre-half playing out of position at left-back. And he's playing against Bernardo Silva, who is like, he's so capable of creating moments, finding space, just popping up with a first-time shot or something like that. So I think the job that Kivior had on his hands yesterday was a very difficult one. I think you're absolutely right to point out what Jesus did from a defensive point of view. But at the same time, you know, he was there in the box. He did have those two shots in the first half. There was that moment where, you know, he could have got a shot off a bit more quickly. And then there was a moment in the second half as well where I think it was probably Saka's best moment of the game. Was it Odegaard who played him in behind?
Yes, it was.
Right-footed cross. And I have to say, I think this is a very, very good piece of defending by Akanji. There's so much focus on, oh, why didn't the forward get there? Why didn't he, you know, slide in? If you watch it again, he just gives him a little nudge, puts him off his stride at exactly the right moment. It's a really great piece of defending from Akanji. So for me, that's not so much a failing of the forward as just very, very good defending at the last minute from the Man City player. But, you know, you can see why. In the context of the game, you just want the guy to throw himself at the ball and make contact at the back post and put it away. But I get it. I don't have too much criticism for Jesus in that situation. It was in the right area. He was just defended very well by a good defender.
Yeah, and I like you say, this is a guy who was defending the edge of his own penalty area for quite long spells of the game, and yet he was also the guy getting on the end of stuff and making things happen in the final third. And when I look at the chances he had, I don't really make any of them particularly gilt-edged, as they say. You know, I don't think he missed any sitters. I just think...
A touch of rust,
maybe, yeah. I mean, listen, there are plenty of games where he does miss chances that you would expect your number nine or your, you know, star striker to take. But I just don't think this was one. I just think the half chances that we had happened to fall to him. And I think some of that's to his credit. But I maintain that I think a fully fit Martinelli would have given the game another dimension. And
sure.
I don't disagree with that,
but I really think Jesus is going to be important in this run-in.
Mm.
Like, I'm a bit surprised at some of the discussion around, well, yeah, his time is done now at Arsenal, we've moved on. Like, I don't quite understand that. We've got 9 games to go. We've got Champions League games to go. This is a guy who does bring a lot to our team. And like I said, I get it. There are elements of his game where I think he can do better. And there are elements of his game that are frustrating. But, you know, as somebody who can play through the middle, he can play left, he can play right. You know, when we've got, 9 Premier League games, 2 Champions League games, maybe more Champions League games to play between now and mid-May in 6 weeks. Like, it feels a bit like throwing the baby out with the bathwater to suggest that this guy isn't going to be able to deliver for us in that time. I think if he stays fit between now and the end of the run, and he is going to be crucial.
Well, also, isn't this the best and maybe most appropriate use of a player like Gabriel Jesus to play a very specific, detailed tactical role in these big games? I think this is what you have a player like that for. You know, he is a manager's dream in that respect. And if you look at great teams in any era, they've had players like that.
Mm.
I mean, Gabriel Jesus was that player for Manchester City, you know, who Guardiola would pick when he needed a player to do a job for him, a really specific job. And I think actually Jesus is more suited to that role, to that sort of status within the squad necessarily than he is to being, you know, the star striker, the 30 goal a season man. I think this is kind of who he is. And I think the fact that we're now using him in that way tells you how far we've come.
It says a lot about the level of our squad. And you look at the bench we had yesterday, it was a very impressive looking bench.
Yeah.
And we're going to...
I heard a lot of people saying, oh, I thought Arteta got the subs right. You know, Arteta did well with the subs. And I was like, it's a lot easier when you've got those players on your bench. You know, like, we've all criticised Arteta's subs before, but, you know, a lot of that is quality. I really do think that. When you're bringing on Tomiyasu and Partey and Trossard, you're in pretty good shape.
Mm-hmm. I saw people refer to this as sort of a tactical chess match in some ways, which... You know, I'm not 100% sure about that, but certainly Manchester City, by the time they got midway through the second half, they had to change something because it wasn't working. They were not getting any purchase out of Arsenal at all. And I think in the second half, some of that scrappiness that was evident in our first half performance was gone. And it was just a case that although they had a lot of the ball, they were not doing anything with it. Like, we completely negated City as a, as an attacking threat beyond a couple of set pieces here and there. So Guardiola decides to change things up with Grealish and Doku coming on for the invisible Foden and Kovacic. So you could see what he was trying to do there. And I think Arteta's response was to put on Tomiyasu and Partey. I feel like Tomiyasu for Kiwior was probably something that was in the pipeline anyway, planned mm-hmm. because of the minutes that he had under his belt. Jorginho, you know, I don't think he was terrible, but I can understand why that change was made as well. But it was sort of like tit for tat substitutions. And Doku had a moment maybe once when he came on. Beyond that, he was defended very well. Grealish is always technically good and caused a few little problems down that left-hand side. And I think actually, if I did have any mild criticism of Mikel Arteta's substitutions, it was that Bukayo Saka didn't come off a little bit earlier because I think he faded badly. I don't think he had a great game. And I think he faded quite badly quite quickly. And I think they should have recognized that perhaps a little more quickly.
Yeah, I mean, to be fair, I think the players were really tired in that final period as well. You know, I saw Martin Odegaard looking tired yesterday. You don't see that very often. And there's a lot of reasons for that. They've been on international duty. You know, they're not in a rhythm of playing for their club. And just the nature of the game, as we spoke about, how draining it was physically, psychologically. You know, I think that's a fair point on Saka. He didn't look as sharp as we're accustomed to seeing. In all likelihood, he's still carrying the problem, you know, that took him out of England duty. And in the end, he kind of had to hobble off. But I hope that maybe this week and the Luton game on Wednesday provides an opportunity to give him a bit of a breather, because you can't see too many more opportunities after that.
No, that's true. That's true. So there is a moment, I think, where, you know, had it gone a little bit differently, we'd be definitely having a goodly morning today. And that was the opportunity for Leandro Trossard, mm-hmm. to play a ball across the box. It would have been almost exactly the same minute of the game for Martinelli to have a chance to win it as at the Emirates earlier in the season. I think the 86th minute was when this happened. Odegaard played Trossard in behind the Manchester City defence, and I think his first touch lets him down. His first touch just isn't quite good enough. I think if he gets the ball ahead of him, the obvious pass is there. I think he makes that pass to the back post for Martinelli. I'm not saying it's 100% that we're going to score there, but it's a brilliant opportunity to win the game if that pass goes across there. But the first touch from Trossard just wasn't good enough. It was a little bit behind him. I think the defender got a cross and cut off those lanes. So that's what I'm talking about, this tinge of regret, that there was that moment there for Arsenal, much like in the game at the Emirates, to win it late on. I don't think City would have scored after that. I think it would have completely taken the wind out of their sails. And when you look at how well we defended and how well we controlled the opportunities that Manchester City had, which were, you know, basically none in that second half, that could have been the 3 points. But, you know, these are the fine margins we talk about all the time, where, you know, a few rolls of a ball is the difference between being able to make that pass and not.
Yeah, it's a really nice move. Tomiyasu into Partey, nice pass between the lines for Odegaard, plays in Trossard. And I was kind of on the edge of my seat at that moment. I think you're absolutely right. It's the first touch, which sort of takes him back inside. You know, it's not quite in front of him enough. And the chance sort of goes away then. I mean, he actually does okay, I think, to get a shot away on his weaker foot. We know he's very two-footed. But, you know, it's always going to be difficult to score from that angle. And that was the moment. And would it have been a smash and grab? I think so. But if you're going to win a Premier League, you need a few smash and grabs along the way. And particularly in these big games. You know, as you say, the first one at the Emirates was probably a bit of a smash and grab, and didn't hear any complaints then. So It's an odd feeling because I'm proud of the team. I think they acquitted themselves really well. They showed a big step forward in terms of maturity, organisation. I think we've established that we are defensively the best team in this division. I really firmly believe that. But I also have this slight nagging feeling that if there was a time to win at the Etihad, this might have been it, given some of their absentees and given the nature of our performance and the fact we were still in the game so late. And I also have a nagging feeling that because it's so close in the Premier League and because I favour City's fixture list over ours, that might have been a winner that we needed.
I get it.
Time will tell.
I know. And I think those are probably thoughts that are shared by everybody. But again, I come back to what our record has been like there, what City do there on a regular basis to pretty much every team that goes there. They score goals. You mentioned the word maturity there a second ago, and I think that, to me, was one of the most impressive parts of yesterday's performance because, you know, this is still a relatively young team out there, you know? And I think there are things about our football that are improving, like something like game management, right? David Raya was time-wasting in a way that I think we would find very frustrating if an opposition goalkeeper was doing that to us.
Yeah.
But you have to be able to do that at the very top level of the game. You have to have an edge of cynicism to you because part of the frustration, you know, it can impact the opposition in a way. It can put them off their stride a little bit. I'm not saying David Raya taking his time over the goal kicks was what made Man City ineffective from an attacking perspective, but I think it disrupts their rhythm. That if you can disrupt the rhythm of a team like Manchester City, you have a better chance of getting something from the game. There was a moment when Rodri span away from Martin Odegaard in midfield and Odegaard basically collapsed on top of him and took him down. And that's the sort of thing that this team needs to be able to do. There was also a moment where Kevin De Bruyne ran away from Thomas Partey and I was like, how have you allowed him to do this? Why haven't you made that foul? Why haven't you made that cynical foul that your captain is showing you that you need to do? But in general, I think the way that Arsenal approached this game was full of pragmatism, maturity, and an understanding of what you need to be able to do against opposition like Manchester City, opposition who have routinely, despite your best efforts, really, really caused you a lot of problems, caused you a lot of pain and heartache and, you know, defensive issues. You know, I think the overall way we played in this game might not have been to everybody's taste, but I think as part of the step forward that this team is making and will continue to make, I really enjoyed that part of it from us.
I mean, I don't know if Arsenal fans will take kindly to this comparison, but was there something a bit Porto-y about the way Arsenal managed to counteract Manchester City yesterday?
Maybe.
I think so. Like, you know, if we were being objective about that Champions League tie, you'd have to. We praised Porto for their street smarts, their organisation, the way in which they nullified some of our strengths, and I think Arsenal had elements of that against City. And what's really encouraging is when we were talking about the Porto tie, you know, saying, "Oh, they're more mature, they're more experienced in this competition." Well, Arsenal went up against the very best yesterday, and I think, you know, they held them at bay, you know, they kept them at arm's length, and that's not easy to do. And I think, yeah, listen, it's a complicated feeling because it kind of sums up how I might end up feeling about this season. You know, I feel really proud of the team's performance yesterday, but I have this sense that there was maybe even more there for them. And maybe I'll feel that in May. You know, maybe I'll feel, wow, what a team this is. How committed, how organised. how mature they are, and they might not have their hands on a trophy, you know?
Yeah, yeah, yeah. I mean,
so that's the standard, right?
That's it. I mean, I think I've seen people talk about how Diego Simeone gets Atletico Madrid to play at times, or not at times, but a lot. I've seen people say, why can't we do a bit of that at Arsenal? Why can't we have a manager, you know, who's tactically willing to do those kinds of things? Not just play the game on your own merits, but disrupt and discombobulate. And I think we did that. And I think, you know, to have that sort of string to our bow, it's not pretty. It's not always enjoyable. But I can tell you this, I enjoyed yesterday a lot more than any of the recent visits to the Etihad.
And so do those away fans, let me tell you. I mean, you know, they were on their feet full time because they've been to this ground and it's a long day, right? It's a long day. You go up to Manchester. They've been up there and watched their team get pumped many a time. So to watch them look, you know, I don't know if comfortable is the right word, but certainly stable in that environment.
Yeah.
And come away with a point that, let's not forget, you know, for all the talk of what a weekend for Liverpool, that's a point that keeps Arsenal ahead of Manchester City with 29 games played. Mm-hmm. We are in a good, good position. And I think actually one of the most interesting things about yesterday was listening to the opposition, right, and the way they spoke about us. There was a very good interview, I thought, with Bernardo Silva.
Yeah, I saw that.
On Sky, where he was speaking about the game last season versus the game this season. And he spoke about what Arsenal did, you know, the fact that they pressed high and tried to nick the ball high up the pitch, but also collapsed into that low block, how difficult they made it for City. You know, when Pep was asked, when Arsenal were in a deep block, you know, how do you break it down? How do you penetrate that? And he sort of just shrugged and said, kill someone. I mean, it's, you know, it's very, very difficult. And Arsenal, that's a huge credit to us. I think we're smashing a stereotype. You know, people have this idea of Arsenal as a fragile team. It permeates all the punditry. And it takes a long time for opinions in football to update. But for me, the performance yesterday is a performance that should start updating those opinions. We know what we see week in, week out. We know the team that we've become. But it's tiring, it's boring listening to other people who don't share that insight and who don't know that about us. But Arteta has completely transformed what Arsenal are and how Arsenal should be spoken about and regarded. And I think that in some ways, doing what we did yesterday, grinding out a point in the hardest stadium to play at in the world, is in some ways kind of a crowning moment of that. You know, it's kind of a high point of saying, look what Arsenal can do now. And that's not all we do.
Exactly.
Well,
that's just what I was going to say, that that's not all we are. But you know, having these strings to our bow, being able to play in different ways, being able to adapt your game plan to different kinds of opposition and the best opposition, you know, is a real testament to the work that's being done. And I think you could probably see in some of the... You mentioned the post-game interview with Bernardo. I feel like sometimes he, I've heard him speak before, and certainly other Manchester City players, where it's felt a bit patronising when they talk about Arsenal. Because they win, they turn up, they win, they turn up, they win, they turn up, they win. So it's easy to be, okay, you know. But yesterday, I think you could see in some of the post-game interactions that, look, you don't win any fucking trophies for mutual respect or anything like that, but I think you could see, even in that exchange between Gabriel and Haaland towards the end, where they're going at each other, at each other, at each other, and then, you know, they kind of come together, have a bit of a hug, and I think you can hear Gabriel saying on the TV, good game, whatever it was, you know. But I think there is something different in those dynamics compared to previous seasons, because Manchester City now recognise that this is not the Arsenal that they always face, who can, on their day, play some nice football, score some nice goals. They've got some decent players who can flit in and out of games. This is a different Arsenal, completely, from front to back, in terms of the... Do I want to say toughness? Is that the right word? But maybe commitment to game plan and organization and the tactics that the manager has put in place for this game, because the tactics for this game were certainly different from, you know, previous games that we've played in the run before the international break, because they've got to be, because it is tailored towards the opposition. But, you know, I think from the start of this season, actually, if you even go back to the Community Shield, Arteta has tactically had Guardiola's number in all of the games. Mm-hmm. All three of those games. And I don't mean to say now he's better than Guardiola or anything like that, but I think what you're seeing is a manager who is, you know, we've spoken about his ability to learn from difficult moments and learn from things that went wrong. I think we're looking at a manager who has taken all the painful experiences he has had against Manchester City and Pep Guardiola, which I think probably feel more acute to him because of his connection with Guardiola and his connection with Manchester City.
I think so. And
has been absolutely determined to put that right this season. Look at what we did in the Community Shield. Look at what we did at the Emirates earlier in the season. Look at what we did yesterday. And that is a guy who's gone toe-to-toe tactically with a team that he has created and put together in order to be able to do that as well. There's a physical element to this Arsenal team that is massively important in games like yesterday, where I think we have been dominated at times physically by Manchester City. Even if you have somebody like, you know, 5'6" Bernardo Silva on the pitch, City have been a big team who bossed us around. Not anymore.
Exactly. And I remember going on the overlap last season and saying, I just wanted to see Arsenal play against City with their spine intact. And we never really got to see it because of Saliba's injury and various other things. But, you know, we had Saliba and Gabriel. We had Declan Rice in the midfield. We had Kai Havertz, who, you know, has become a really important player in these big games for Arteta, adding that physicality, adding that strength. And the other thing to say about this result is, understandably, it's being analysed through the prism of the Premier League, right? It's a Premier League game and everyone's talking about the title race, particularly on Sky, because that's what they've got the rights to. But I also think this was a massive result when you consider that there is a very decent chance that these two teams could find themselves in a Champions League semi-final. And if Arsenal had been beaten comfortably, say, at the Etihad yesterday, I think that tie would have felt very daunting. And not to say it won't now.
Yeah, sure.
But I think Arsenal doing what they did, you know, if Arsenal could do that in an away leg of a Champions League semi-final, you know, it puts a really different complexion potentially on that draw and on that tie. So I think, you know, I hope we avoid City, to be honest with you. And so does the neutral, I'm sure. But I think it could have real ramifications and real impact on us if we end up having to play them again.
Yeah. I also hope we avoid Manchester City, which isn't to say I think Real Madrid would be any easier. I think I would prefer the spectacle of Arsenal versus Real Madrid than another two games of Arsenal-Manchester City. As much as I can take from what we did yesterday, I just think from a pure footballing perspective, I would prefer Real Madrid. Of course, you've got to get through against Bayern Munich first, so we're not counting any chickens or anything like that. But I think it is a good point that if that does transpire, then the ramifications of what we've done against them already this season could well play out in those semi-final games. So,
well, yeah. I mean, I'm sure the bookies will make them favourites if that semi-final happens, but we beat them at home and we drew away.
Yeah. So, yeah. You know, I'm quite satisfied with what we did yesterday.
Do you know what, Andrew?
What?
I think, having reflected on it, I think when I throw in the women winning the Conti Cup as well, I think I might have to give it a goodly morning. You know?
Well, that's true. That's true. We are remiss for not having mentioned that already, but maybe with the fact that Arsenal women have brought silverware to the club with a 1-0 win over Chelsea, which is fantastic because fuck Chelsea, basically. You know, to have won that final yesterday and to take the point there, maybe it does make it a goodly morning overall. So yeah, congratulations to the Arsenal women, and I believe it was a great day out for the Arsenal fans. Albeit with a scary moment for Frida Manham, and fingers crossed she's going to be okay. But like 1-0 win in a final against Chelsea, can't beat that.
No, I know. I saw the sort of full-time whistle on Twitter, you know, and I was thinking this could be a really good weekend. And when Trossard went through, I was like, this could be the weekend. but I think on balance, it's still pretty decent.
It is pretty decent. And for those who would like to relive the Conti Cup win a little bit more, Tim is going to have a podcast for you a little bit later on this afternoon. So we will bring that to you as well. Reflections on Arsenal's 1-0 win over Chelsea in the Conti Cup. And no doubt there will be some chatter about Jonas Eidevall and Emma Hayes and all kind of stuff as well. So, yeah, there we go. Will we take a little break?
Let's do that, yeah.
Okay, we'll be back with your questions and more in part two right after this.
Even on a budget, quality is non-negotiable. That's why Quince is the place to score high-end essentials at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Get your hands on buttery soft cashmere sweaters from just $60, Italian leather jackets, and so much more. And the best part about Quince? They exclusively partner with factories committed to safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Elevate your style without the elevated price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/upgrade for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Everyone knows therapy is great for solving problems, but getting therapy has its own problems too, like finding the right therapist, fitting into their schedule, and of course, the cost. Well, BetterHelp can solve those problems. It's totally online and built around your schedule. It's surprisingly affordable too. Connect with a credentialed therapist by phone, video, or online chat, all from the comfort of your home. Visit BetterHelp.com to learn more and save 10% on your first month. That's BetterHelp, H-E-L-P.
Welcome back to the Arscast Extra. This is part two of the show where we answer questions that you send to us on Twitter at Gunnarblog and at Arsblog. Also on the Arsblog Discord chat server, which you get access to if you are an Arsblog member on Patreon. A couple of quick things before we get into questions. On Friday's Arscast, I forgot to give the winners of our Ben White t-shirt competition. This is Ben White as George Michael from Club Tropicana. Very exclusive t-shirt. There aren't many of these in the world. The random number generator has pulled out Lauren Murphy and Michael Kalispera. So well done to you two. Isn't that a word in Greek? Kalispera.
Kalispera, yeah. Yes, it is. What does it mean?
Good morning or good evening or...
Right. Good morning. You're right.
Right. There you go. So well done to you two. I'll be in touch by email. I will get your details and we'll get those t-shirts sent out to you. Thank you to all of you for your entries. Much appreciated. The other thing I would ask of you, we haven't asked it recently, but if you could give the podcast a review in your favorite podcasting app, that would be great. You can find a link in the show notes to ratethispodcast.com/arsblog. That will bring you to a review section in many of the podcast apps, but whether it's iTunes, is it still called iTunes? I don't think it even is anymore.
Apple Podcasts, I think. Yeah.
Apple Podcasts or wherever you listen to your podcasts. I don't know if you can do that shit on Spotify and all the rest, but if you could give us a review, we'd really, really appreciate it. So thank you very much indeed in advance for all that. Okay.
I must say, by the way, I think Kalispera is actually good afternoon. I got
right.
that wrong.
Okay.
I don't want all the complaints from all our Greek listeners. So I think it's good afternoon, in fact.
Yes. Please email all your complaints to james@arsblog.com. that email address doesn't exist, by the way. So
thankfully, it does not exist.
Okay.
Go on.
Questions. Here's one. The Chief, who's at macho_grande1, says, I've wanted to see Martinelli get game time from the right-hand side for two seasons now. Was yesterday's substitution one and done a victim of circumstance, or is it something we might see more of during the run-in? Is it one and done, is what he says? Is it just like a once-off? Or do you think that might be a potential option between now and the end of the season?
Yeah. I'm not convinced we'll see a lot of it, personally. I think the fact that we had to make that change, to me, shows we are still just sort of one light in that position. I think, you know, we've been saying for a while we need a true alternative to Saka, and I don't think we have that in the squad. I think Jesus is probably our next best right winger, but obviously he started on the left in this game. Could we see it? Of course. But I think Arteta's quite wedded to having Martinelli on the left. And I expect that's where he'll play if and when he's back. What do you
think? I mean, for example, if Bukayo Saka is rested in midweek for Luton, who do you start on the right? Is it Jesus?
Yeah, I think I would start Jesus. If Kai Havertz is fit to go again at centre forward, then I think I would go Jesus and have Trossard maybe on the left-hand side. Mm. There's a nice little balance to that front three. I mean, listen, please don't all throw fruit at me, but if Trossard isn't ready, I think it's conceivable that Eddie Nketiah might even play that game. But yeah, I think Jesus is our next best right winger. What do you think?
Yeah, I think that's where I would go with that, depending on how, you know, how he's feeling. He feels like a player we might need to manage the minutes a little bit, but if he's feeling good, the knee is okay, and he's feeling good after 70 minutes thereabouts against Man City, he's certainly somebody I would be inclined to play out there, ahead of Martinelli for sure. But this is probably something we'll touch on a bit more in the preview podcast, and I'm sure Mikel Arteta will be asked about it in his press conference tomorrow. But to what extent do you think he might rotate against Luton? Because, as you mentioned, I think it is an opportunity, and maybe the last opportunity, for certain players to A, have a bit of a rest, or B, get minutes into the legs of players that we're going to need coming off the bench. So maybe make them a little bit more match fit. But at the same time, respecting the opposition, respecting the difficulty of the Premier League, not being accused of, well, you took Luton for granted by making four or five changes in this game. It's a tricky balance, I think.
Yeah. And, you know, if Arsenal win, Liverpool don't play till Thursday, Arsenal go top of the Premier League. And that might have some impact on the narrative. I think he can make a couple of changes, two or three, but I can't see more than that. Mm. If you look back at Man City's title wins, invariably, you know, they don't tend to make more than two changes game to game. And I think it will need to be the same for Arsenal. So if we say Saka comes out, the other one I could see potentially might be Kivior coming out. Because obviously Tomiyasu came on. You've also got Zinchenko, who didn't even get on the pitch, but did play for Ukraine, you know, a game and a half or so. So I think that could be another change that we might make. I think other than that, it'll be pretty much as we're accustomed to.
Do you think he'll look at it from the point of view of, okay, let's play a strong side, do hopefully what we did against, you know, West Ham or Sheffield United? Again, I'm not taking anything for granted, but he might look at it as a way of, you know, get yourself into a good lead, and then you can put on players like Vieira, Partey, Nelson, whoever, you know, just as a way of getting minutes into their legs and resting some of the players who are out there from the start.
Yeah. To be honest, it wouldn't even surprise me that much if Mikel went even stronger than we're anticipating. Mm. Because I just think, you know, we're saying, well, it won't be our games against City and Liverpool that potentially stop us winning this Premier League. It'll be games like Fulham at home. You know, I just think we cannot afford to do anything other than take maximum points. So I think it will be a strong team. And if we can bring people off with half an hour to go, great. But I just don't think Arteta will take anything for granted at all. Mm. So, yeah, it'd be fascinating to see. I certainly don't think we're going to get, you know, five or six changes and people like Emil Smith-Rowe playing. Or, you know, I think it's going to be the team with a couple of tweaks. And I think in the left-back position, you know, there's an argument that the change may even make us stronger or closer to our more recognisable first 11, you know, if someone like a Zinchenko plays. So we shall see. We shall see. But I think Saka probably should start this one on the bench simply because, as I said in part one, I don't see where else that opportunity to rest him is going to come.
Yeah.
What about this question? We touched on the women's team and the Conti Cup, and Lizzie H just asked for our opinion on one of the men's biggest games of the season being scheduled not just on the same day, but with overlapping times to the Conti Cup final. Arsenal have been amazing advocates of the women's team for decades, and as the game progresses, this seems so thoughtless.
I agree. I just don't know what the process is.
Yeah.
You know,
I think the women's game was scheduled first, right? The cup final was always set for that date, as I understand it.
Yeah.
So it would have been incumbent on the men's game, the organisation, to accommodate that.
But then it's clearly the decision of the broadcasters to move the game rather than, you know, I'm sure in the discussions, if Arsenal have any input, they can say, well, look, you know, was that decision made before Arsenal were in the Conti Cup final? I mean, the potential was always going to be there. It is a shame, though. It really is a shame because it's not quite divided loyalties, is it? But if you're an Arsenal fan, you want to see both of those games. You want to watch the women in the cup final, then you want to watch the game against Manchester City. Not that we could watch it here in Ireland, by the way. It was supposed to be on BBC Two, and when I turned on BBC Two, it was rugby. Oh, Ireland against Italy in rugby, which, you know, not for
that's
me.
A shame. But yeah, it is a problem for sure. And as the women's game develops, as Lizzie suggests, it's going to become more and more of an issue. It is quite difficult because they are relatively separate entities to figure it out. You know, how do you achieve that sort of scheduling? It adds another wrinkle to the whole process. But with such a big game and a cup final clashing, it is frustrating. And yeah, I hope it's something that in the coming, you know, year or two can be addressed so that more fans can watch more of both teams.
Mm. Chris Evans, all right, Captain America, he says, how did you feel about the refereeing? I felt we got off pretty lightly, especially early on in the game when the ref clearly went in with an agenda of being card shy. And Miachi, who's at Miachi on Twitter, says Anthony Taylor received praise for reffing the occasion and keeping his cards in his pocket. I was pleased from an Arsenal point of view, but objectively, we should have had two yellows in the first half. Do you think refs should ref big games differently? Surely rules are just rules.
I don't agree, actually. I never have agreed with that.
With that, what?
That rules are rules and every game's the same. I think that's not how I see refereeing. And that's why I never say, I just want objectivity. I just want, you know, everything to be the same in every game. I think that's not really sport. Like, I think you have to manage the temperature of a match. A lot of people I saw saying, like, the referee did quite well. A lot of Arsenal fans. And I was like, yeah, the Man City fans didn't think that.
No, I didn't think so. I didn't think they would. I think if we, you know, I think some of those decisions would really have frustrated us if we were Manchester City fans.
But I have to be honest and say, I prefer that style of refereeing. I do think that, you know, you can get into this thing where you start just giving out a yellow card for everything and, you know, it can run away with you and really turn the game into something. It can have this sort of inverse effect as intended. And I thought the referee in the second leg of the Porto game sort of had a similar policy. And again, I quite liked it. I sort of think it's a bit dangerous. Dangerous. I think it's risky to give out a yellow card for the first offence in a big game 10 minutes in, because I think you just... I know the intention is to stop that happening, but what happens instead is you get a game where it becomes all about the officiating.
Yeah, I know what you mean. It's a balancing act.
It is a tricky one, because if you let everything go, then it's like, well, people can take the piss, you know.
Yeah, I mean, I don't think there was anything too outrageous though in terms of. I mean, I think Jorginho got away with one. Was in the first half where he slid in a couple of times and didn't get a yellow card.
I couldn't believe it took us. Was Raya our first booking?
No, Jesus, right. Which was like where he went to get the ball for Manchester City because they had a free kick, and then he just rolled it slightly away from the player he was supposed to give the ball to. Like, I don't know why he went to get the ball in the first place.
No, I think probably just pure instinct, and then he was like, oh, hang on, what am I doing here? Yeah. But yeah, I mean, Jesus, you know, the fans were onto him for a booking from pretty early on in the game. I think we escaped a couple. Well, how should I put it? I think ordinarily you would expect us to have picked up a couple more yellow cards than we did.
Yeah. Performance. But there wasn't anything, I don't think City fans can say, well, he should have been booked there and therefore he should have been sent off at that point, or the referee didn't make a huge, huge error. He was just a bit lenient. And there were maybe a couple where he was lenient for Manchester City too, you know?
And to be fair to Guardiola, like, he was sort of pushed on this in his press conference and said, you know, what did you think of Arsenal? A bit of time wasting, a bit of gamesmanship. And he was like, I thought the game was fair and was played in a good spirit. And I think that's broadly true, to be honest. You know, the lines were a bit blurred, but I think that the referee actually did pretty well to sort of navigate that. And I don't think I'm just saying that because it benefited us. I think generally that is what I want from a referee, like the application of some common sense. But it's interesting. And, you know, it does raise an interesting debate about, well, you know, why is that a yellow card in this game and not in that game? And I do understand that.
Mm.
But it's human beings, isn't it?
Sure.
What should we have now? Okay, here's a bit of a downer.
Oh.
The North Bank Arsenal podcast. I know, right? given our brilliant efforts against our title rivals, which misstep from this season frustrates the most? Fulham home or away? West Ham home? Spurs home?
I'm trying
What's
not
the
to
one we're going to be ruining.
Trying not to dwell on them, you know. I suppose as something that's slightly anomalous to our season, the Fulham away performance probably stands out a bit more. I think the West Ham game was one of those just weird ones, you know, that you see happen in football quite a lot. A team dominates and just ends up on the wrong side of a result, and it can happen, and it happens, you know, with a certain amount of frequency. The paucity of the performance that day against Fulham is somewhat inexplicable to me based on everything we've seen from Arsenal this season. To have such an off day from, you know, in basically every area of the pitch, I think that's the one that sticks with me most. Simply because it's not something we've seen before, and it's not something we've really seen since. We've had, you know, some results that haven't gone our way, but at no point in this season have we played as poorly as we did in that Fulham game.
I can't look at it. I think you're right, but I can't look at that Fulham game and the West Ham game sort of separately. I know they were really different performances, but that sort of mad week where our season just sort of turned upside down, I sort of can't separate it all out.
Yeah.
It felt like something afflicted us in that period. I mean, chiefly an inability to score goals. And I remember us saying at the time, you know, how costly could that be? And you know, if we don't ultimately win the league, I suspect we'll look back at those 6 points and sort of, I think we'll genuinely find it hard to understand like how there was just this 1 week of the season where, you know, it just didn't happen for us. And that 1 week, what was it, like 4 days or something like that between the games, that could cost you a title.
Yeah.
But that is the reality, the painful reality.
Maybe so. Yeah. Look, it was reflective of how things can change very quickly in football. Top of the table at Christmas and everybody's, you know.
And things could still change very quickly.
Exactly. Exactly.
What about this? I mean, this is sort of, you know, on a similar line of questioning. Adam Singh says, annoying question, but it's just come to me. Oh, he says another question. I've added the annoying. I don't think it is annoying. I think it's interesting. How many of the remaining games do you think the eventual title winner will win? Is it going to be 9 from 9?
Oof. I think it's going to have to be at least 8.
Really?
Yeah.
Oh, that's a lot of games to win, isn't it?
It is a lot of games to win.
I was going to say 7. I think...
I was going to say 7 as well, but then I just remembered what City do. Yeah. And I remembered what Liverpool are sort of capable of doing with this sort of emotional wave
avalanche
that they're riding.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? They're sort of really embracing that. And I think that is going to be the reality. I think if we win 8 of the 9, there's a very good chance we go into the last day of the season either as champions or with the ability to win the title on the final day.
I should fucking hope so. 8 from 9.
I know, but
hell.
Like this is what it is, you know?
I know. I'm not necessarily disagreeing with you. I'm just hearing that out loud. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
There aren't very few easy games. We've just spoken about defeats to West Ham and Fulham. 8 from 9. That's a tough, tough ask. But I agree with you. I think that I might dip to 7,
right,
but certainly no less than that. I think one of these teams is going to win 7 games.
Mm.
Spoiler, it's probably Man City.
Yeah, maybe. Well, they've done it. You know, that's the thing. They have done it. And that's kind of what Arteta keeps saying, isn't it? When he's asked about these kinds of things, they've done it.
Yeah.
This team has been there and they've done that. And that's something that we still have to prove. And whether we can prove it this season remains to be seen. I hope we can. But like I said in the first half, I do think the direction of travel for this particular team is obvious. And I think there are things that we can do better and things that we can improve on. So if it's not this season,
well,
I don't think further than that.
I'd say we've got the best trajectory of those three clubs. If you sort of take a bigger picture view,
mm-hmm,
you know, the youngest team out of those three, the team who I think are most obviously developing. Klopp is leaving in the summer. Who knows who else might leave Liverpool in the summer? That's all a bit of an unknown quantity. You know, De Bruyne, Walker, players like that, you know, they're not necessarily right in their prime anymore. I think we're the best positioned in some respects of those three to be successful over the next 5 years. But it'd be nice to have something to show for this year.
Yeah, for sure. Just going back to this one, I thought this was quite interesting. Stedersaurus says on the Discord, he says, does our ability to escape a yellow card for fouling show that we're now a serious team at the top of the table?
Our ability to escape a yellow card. Do you think the question means in terms of how referees perceive us
then? Yes.
Yeah, I think there may be something to that.
Yeah.
I spoke about changing stereotypes and perceptions, and you know, City have got away with it for years, haven't they?
Mm-hmm.
You know, tugging people back. There's that famous clip of Arteta in the documentary
telling them
all that he wants them to do it. And I think Martin Odegaard is becoming a pretty sort of chief exponent of that particular art.
The baby-faced assassin.
Absolutely. You know, that he's got that youthful looking innocence. But he's pretty cynical out there. when he needs to be. And yeah, it was striking when we didn't do it. I've got to say, when De Bruyne sort of drove past Partey, from the minute De Bruyne got the ball, anyone in the press box will attest to the fact that there was a man sat at his computer shouting, foul, 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 foul. I was terrified in that moment.
I agree with you. And it frustrated me as well, because this is kind of what happened last season, where Partey got bypassed easily in that game. And look, that wasn't the only reason we didn't get anything from that game. But I was looking at him and go, come on, man, you're fucking experienced. You should be able to recognize the danger here. You should take the yellow card. You haven't played this season. It's not like you're going to get a suspension. Take the yellow card. I hope that is something that is, in their video session this week that they go over, because, that is what you need to do. It's what Jorginho did in the first half. It's what Odegaard did in the second half. Can I just as well give a slight shout to Ben White here for a little moment with Jack Grealish? Did you notice that? Where?
Oh, no. Tell me. I didn't see that.
They sort of had a coming together, and then Ben White got up and then fell over and sort of had a look at Jack Grealish, made it look as if Jack Grealish tripped him up, but he didn't. I don't think it was just more Ben White madness.
I thought Ben White was really good.
Yes.
Particularly in the first half, he just gave us an outlet in a time in the game where we didn't really have one. I thought he was excellent. Naturally, there's going to be a lot of focus on Saliba and Gabriel because of the Haaland factor, as you described. But I thought Ben White was just as good, really, at right back.
Yeah, I'm just watching it back here. So Jack Grealish has the ball. Ben White follows him into midfield. Grealish falls over. Ben White kicks the ball away and then falls over Jack Grealish's foot. Oh, my God, I love him so much.
Ben White doing Ben White stuff.
Ben White doing Ben White stuff. What a man. What a man. Is it my question or your question? No, it's your question, because I just asked that question about the referees. Or
that is true. Okay. Wise Markler says, is it time to talk about Saliba's passing? I don't think it's anywhere near equal to his skills as a defender and needs serious work.
I don't think it was good yesterday.
Right.
Certainly in the first half, but I don't think it's big issue. I'd have to look into the stats properly to see what is.
It's not been flagged in my mind as something that's a problem. If anything, I think he's passed pretty well this season, but I'm open to being proven wrong.
Like, it wasn't good in the first half, but I can't log into my Y-Scout because it's forgotten my password, but I'll have to have a look at that. I mean, I think yesterday he was under pressure a little bit, didn't deliver the ball as well as he usually can. But, this is a guy who made 150 passes in a game a few weeks back. What was the one? Was it Sheffield United? Something like that. So I don't think it's a big issue, but I do think he was below par yesterday.
I think, as we spoke about in part one, I don't think anybody's passing out from the back was particularly good yesterday. And I think City did quite well sort of closing down channels. With Raya, I think they forced him to go on his left foot quite frequently. And, that doesn't play to his strengths necessarily. I didn't think he was necessarily worse than anybody else in the Arsenal team. And I think in general, he's pretty able on the ball.
Yeah. Okay. Is it my question?
It is.
Where is the question that I was going to ask you? Boom, boom, boom. Okay, JB at Johnny_B_AFC. Goodly-ish morning, gents. James, you said you wanted Liverpool to win when they faced City 3 weeks back, as the team that finishes above City will win the title. Do you still believe that?
Yeah, I do, actually. I do. I know that, the consensus yesterday was it's a great result for Liverpool, and Liverpool obviously got the win against Derby. Derby?
Brighton.
Brighton. I was looking at the words Deserby on my screen and I just sort of elided them to make Derby. But I still think if anyone finishes above City, they'll win it. Listen, there's plenty of evidence to the contrary. There's a good case for why it might be Liverpool. But my feeling is that it's going to be City, or unless someone else does something extraordinary. I just look at their games, and I you know, we are into that period of the season where I cannot see them dropping many slash any points.
Yeah, I haven't looked at their fixtures because I don't want to. I don't want to.
Do you want me to tell you or not?
No, I don't want you. No,
I mean it. Yeah.
Mm.
I sort of find myself hoping that Spurs might beat them, right? And when you're relying on Spurs,
you're fucked.
Thank you.
You're absolutely fucked. Do you remember that year where on the final day of the season we needed Spurs to beat Manchester United? Do you remember that?
I remember it very well. I was at Highbury, I think. Was it 99?
Jesus.
Yeah, we had Villa, I think. And Spurs were winning at one stage.
Yeah, of course they were. Fucking useless cunts.
And then they Spursed.
They Spursed it.
They Spurs, therefore they are Spurs. Mm-hmm. I do stand by that view, yeah. If you asked me to put my, life savings or whatever it might be on who's going to win this league, I would say City right now.
Mm.
Do you have slightly more of a feeling for Liverpool, do you?
I just think they're both capable.
Yeah.
I'll have to sit down and look at the fixtures to have a really properly informed decision on this. I think they're both capable. I think City are most likely. I would say if we finish above City, we've won the league. But
yeah,
it's so tight. It's so tight. And there is so little margin for error. But who knows? Mad things can happen in football. And you might be able to get away with something. I just don't know. I can only really expend the emotional energy I have on Arsenal rather than worrying about what Liverpool are going to do and Manchester City are going to do.
Yeah. I may be wrong, but my feeling is that City will win it. And I don't think all three teams will get quite to the line. I think, you know, someone will drop away. Not fall away dramatically,
yeah.
But, you know, by a few points to the extent where probably on the final day it's between two.
Mm.
But listen, it could be us that falls away. I think we've got the hardest games. I think we've got the hardest games of the three. But what a platform we have in the defensive performance we showed yesterday.
Sure. I mean,
you know, what we need to do if we're going to win this league is, well, apparently win 8 of 9. Mm-hmm. And win some really tough away games. And if you defend like we did yesterday, you're putting yourself in a very good position.
Yes. I mean, with the caveat that I think you do need to be better offensively than we were yesterday. But I think City is something of a one-off in that respect, you know, in terms of your balance between defending and committing to attack. I don't think you need to be quite as... cautious, maybe the wrong word, but I don't think you need to be as afraid of the other teams as you do of Manchester City.
Yeah, and other teams can't do to us what City did in terms of forcing us back and penning us in.
Mm.
You know, I think we can debate sort of how voluntary or not that was, but you won't see Arsenal play like they did yesterday many more times this season anywhere. No,
that's true. That is true. Have we got more? Have we anything else?
I think I've sort of covered off what I was looking to cover off, Andrew, but happy to answer any others you've got to suggest.
What about this one? Luke Kempner says, what's the best way to tell opposing fans to fuck off when they criticise us for parking the bus?
God. I mean, I gave that stat about four touches in the City penalty area in the first half and it being... a joint record. We share that record with Stoke, you'll be delighted to know.
How the fuck did Stoke do that?
I don't know. Probably by playing four centre halves, I imagine, which is also what we do now. How do we tell them to fuck off? I just think in the way that feels most natural to you. But make no mistake about doing it. I mean, they can fuck off. It's not our concern. The sort of outpouring of frustration and gripes with the way Arsenal played is just a consequence of this being a game that was on the telly. Everyone wants to watch it. It's Easter Sunday. Everyone's off on holiday for the bank holiday. Top of the table clash. They all tune in, hoping for some drama.
Yeah, 6-6, you know?
Yeah, exactly. Or 6-0 to somebody. You know what I mean? Like, that, as a neutral, that's lovely to watch.
Mm-hmm.
But we didn't give them that.
No.
And they're probably, based on Arsenal's previous trips to the Etihad, pretty disappointed. But fuck them.
Yeah, absolutely. Fuck them. And, you know, in response to Luke, I don't know, maybe you could do it in different voices of celebrity True. People. You know, if you were that kind of a person, some kind of impressionist. I don't know. Maybe that would be a way of adding variety to the way you tell people to fuck off. But that could be quite specific to Luke. Final one, because I wanted to ask you, you were at the game yesterday, and VizHal 007... Oh, we found the new James Bond. Excellent. He's on the Discord, and he says, what the fuck is up with the double advertising boards at the Etihad? Is this how they're pumping revenue, charging double and whatnot?
They're 116 fucking charges.
They're huge.
They are. Do you know what?
Were they distracting?
Not in IRL, as they say.
Right.
But this was actually, remarkably, my first ever trip to the Etihad. Perhaps unsurprisingly, I've always sort of tried to avoid it before now. And it is a weird old place, I will say that. You know, I sat with Amy Lawrence, and before the game, we were sort of remarking on how staid the atmosphere was. You know, when they were like announcing the team lineups, there was just sort of like polite applause, and it's a far, far cry from an Anfield or even an Emirates Stadium these days. It is weirdly kind of clinical environment, and I'm sure all the kind of commercial advertising maybe feeds into that to a certain extent.
Because I was watching Ben White take a throw in, and the advertising hoarding was above his head.
Wow.
You know, it's quite weird because most clubs have their hoardings around the side, but then, you know, they're sort of, what, 2 or 3 feet high? These were at least 6 or 7 feet high, these hoardings, which is...
They're just trying to find workarounds for FFP.
Yeah, yeah. I think they should be banned.
Okay.
Not just the hoardings.
Do you mean Manchester City? Yeah?
Yeah, Man City should be banned.
I agree.
From existence. That would be my... That would be my takeaway on that. Okay, we're going to leave it there. It is going to be busy, of course, this week. Later, as I said, Tim's going to have an Arsenal Women podcast for you. We will have an episode of The 30 over on Patreon, looking back at all the weekend's Premier League action. We'll have that for you this afternoon, as well as having a preview podcast for the Luton game tomorrow. So if you want to get on board with our Patreon experience, instant access to everything we do on there, it is patreon.com/arsblog. For now, we'll leave it there. Thank you so much, as always, for being with us, and we will catch you on the next one.
Bye-bye.
Small details or big surfaces, tight corners or odd shapes, flat, rounded, textured, or tall. Whatever your next project, there's a spray paint pattern that's just right. Because Rust-Oleum's new Custom Spray 5-in-1 gives you control with 5 different spray patterns. So you can tackle nooks, crannies, edges, and curves without worrying about drips, runs, uneven coverage, or anything else. Custom Spray 5-in-1. Only from Rust-Oleum.